Maggie, Marilyn, and
David.
David Maher, yep.
Is David coming?
He's
traveling, right?
I think he said he could make a call on Wednesday, but not yesterday. So hopefully.
I thought that he was in Egypt.
Well, that may be too, so.
Just let me check.
Who do we have on the call for the moment?
Currently we have Kathy, Thomas, Tom, and you, Nicholas, along with myself and Glenn. Well, let's, in the interest of getting this started sooner rather than later, why don't I...
David did decline here.
Okay, so David won't be here. So we're missing Maggie and Marilyn, if people wait.
Not a very good excuse. We all logged in from Cairo. A few years ago.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to just kick this off by starting some initial dialogue. We won't make any... decisions, hopefully, until a couple more people join. But I'm wondering, Kathy's made a proposal on the tiered access front that...
Maggie Manstark, yes?
Hi, Maggie. That she presented on the list a few days ago that we haven't yet seen any real dialogue around. So I'm wondering if we might just start with a brief discussion of that and see, you know, especially what people's reactions are to the terms of that proposal and if it gets us anywhere closer to the compromise I think Kathy's hoping for. So we can't get to some sort of policy recommendation on this front. So, Kathy, could you just spend, like, literally a minute or two talking through how your proposal might have differed from things we've seen in the past?
Sure, and in fact, it doesn't differ all that much. So, I hope everybody was able to download the Word file, because if you did, then what you'll see is the text that the registrars have put forward, and then in bold, the addition. So, you know, the changes come out very quickly. I didn't want to, you know, not trying to stump anybody on any of this. Just to run through it, the registrars have proposed a three-tiered level, so we haven't changed anything about data displayed to the anonymous user, and we haven't changed anything about... data displayed on the third tier to an administrative entity like a registrar or registry. Those are exactly the same, tiers one and three. What changes is number two, a little bit, not so much, it's more clarification and a little bit of change. Data displayed to a known user with a known use. And as you know, the non-commercial presented a proposal that talked about giving out name and email on tier two, and that was supported by the registries and also by ALAC. And so we did a lot of thinking and talking with Tom Keller and others about what the email means in Europe, and apparently email is fairly sensitive. So let me just run down tier two for a second. So that's why we move into this name address model, the registrar's model, as a compromise, because there was this issue over email. So on tier two, one of the things we didn't know is what's a known user? And so we set out a little bit about, you know, the user, the data user should identify himself, herself, itself, and provide information, set out the reasons why they're requesting, specific reasons why they think they need this information, of course, what the domain name is. And then, just really clearly state that there should be specific, you know, consent and agreement not to misuse the data, that it won't be used for secondary purposes, that it'll only be used for the purpose that they're seeking it for. So really, just kind of clarification. And then, of course, the registrar has the obligation to authenticate. So this became a topic of discussion, what this means, and we're still not really sure. There's been talk of certificates and maybe this task force a little bit, also Task Force One, but you know, somehow we should authenticate, you know, these people, data requesters shouldn't be coming in and putting in, you know, fraudulent information. So once the registrar is authenticated, then the same data that the registrar specified before would go out. You know, the name, the address of the registrant, the administrative contact, the technical contact. Now you get the email of the technical contact as well. We put in a little bit about not having, you know, broad search capabilities, mostly because we were hearing a lot about this from the EU and the data protection officials. And then we did add something, which was a notice. We clarified and really laid out what the notice is to the domain name holder, to the data subject. And when this Tier 2 sensitive data goes out, we think the compromise proposal put out that the domain name holder should get an email that just says, you know, your information's been given out, here's who it was given to, here was the method of verification, here's the reason that they gave for giving it, and here's the date and time. Because from a non-commercial perspective, we've got human rights groups that are part of our organizations. As the ISP comments noted, there are some real, you know, at the phrase, there are some real human rights issues here. And God forbid somebody's safety is at stake, we want them to have notice that their address just went out. So they can do something about it. And that's about it. That's kind of the compromise. It really clarifies what known use or for known use is and then provides some notice for the domain name holder.
Great. Kathy, let me ask you this one proposal the IPCs in the past indicated they would probably be comfortable with something like the .name model. Would you say that based on your understanding of what .name was doing to verify people's identity on the requester side, that would satisfy the conditions of your proposal? Obviously, there's still the additional requirement in your proposal of providing notice to the registrant. But if something, you know, were to use like a credit card or something like that in order to verify identity, is that sufficient to meet this requirement?
First, I think the .name model is different, and I know there are people on the call who understand it much better than I do. So I'm not sure I think there are some key differences here, but I'm not sure I could lay them out for you very clearly.
I guess I'm not speaking to certainly the data displayed is different. But I guess I'm just asking, you know, they've also demonstrated a specific mechanism to understand who is making the request. And I guess I'm just asking it whether you think it's compatible with the requirements of verifying the identity of the requester.
That's a really good. Do you mind if I throw that out to other people who know more about credit card verification?
Sure.
Anybody?
Yeah, sure. Does anyone on the call feel like they, having looked at Kathy's proposal and the .name model, feel like they have an answer to that?
Well, maybe I can answer that. It should be possible to use that methodology as well, but I think it's not as feasible as, for example, using certificates, because there are already companies out there who know how to do that, and it's an international approved process, and doing some kind of authentication of credit cards might be hard to implement in all different for all the registrars that we've operated. So it would be a process which must be done at the who is operator side. And having certificates can be very easily certified and verified by anyone by an higher entity, more or less. So it would be possible to use it, but it does not really make any difference.
Sure. That makes sense, Tom. But let me ask you this, Tom. An existing certificate issue, like from, say, VeriSign, does that necessarily capture the same set of data that Kathy is looking for as part of her proposal that the requester has to disclose as part of making the request?
I'm not sure whether you have to put in their personal data, but it at least includes name, street address, and some electronic means of reachability or contactability. That could be the telephone number or the email address.
Right. So
the reality is we might use a certificate to establish identity, and then a specific request might be established, might be requested along with each individual request for data. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you use a certificate to show I am really Joe Smith, and then you have to, with each request, you have to provide a specific reason as to why you're looking at that individual name.
Exactly.
Okay, so the main difference between this your model and the registrar model is that you have added this requirement of providing notification to the registrant, and you've provided some detail as to what known user is.
Right.
Okay, great. So does anyone else have comments or thoughts on Kathy's proposal, particularly maybe Nicholas or Maggie?
Nicholas here. If you allow me, Jordan, can I just go back one step, because I have the feeling that there are some general questions that we should basically ask before we start looking at really concrete models. As you know, Steve has been more involved than me in this task force, but still, I think I'm talking for the IPC in saying that, as we have already stated, we're not opposed in principle to the idea of a tiered access. I think a tiered access system might actually enable us to strike a balance between privacy and contactability, and that's really the big question we're looking at here. But I still think that this should be seen in light of the more general understanding, and I know some of you will not agree with me here, but I think it should be seen looking at the more general understanding that those who register domain names are basically holding themselves out to communicate with the public. And well, therefore, who is data publicly available? But anyhow, and just to be constructive, to get back to this idea now of finding an equilibrium between, on the one hand, the privacy concerns, and on the other hand, the need for contactability, and in this very context, look at what tiered access could do, or the role it could play in how shall I put it, in getting the right equation. I think, and I would suggest to look at the series of questions that we've tried to put down on paper, thinking about these questions, and I think that we need to come up with the right answers to these questions, and because otherwise, instead of having the right equilibrium, we might just end up with total imbalances. And the questions I have in mind are basically, there are six or seven questions, and it would be interesting to hear what you think about them. But I think, and that's what I mean by stepping back a little before looking at concrete models, I think the first question is basically, what are the criteria for qualification in each tier? This is something that has to be defined. And the second question that follows the first one is, who determines whether a requester meets those qualifications? And I think this is a question that Tom will probably be sensitive to in terms of cost. We have to find a system that is basically acceptable to all stakeholders here. And I don't think anybody wants to be overburdened in a tiered access system. And that's the problem of scalability. We have also to make sure that the system is implemented in a uniform way. I mean, we are in a WHOIS environment with, I don't know, more than 150, 160 registrars, and we have to find a way to make sure that we have from implementation here, and I think this is a basic question. And then the fifth question would be, when and to whom would the identity of requesters be disclosed? That's also a question I think we haven't looked enough at. And to which registrants should the system apply? That would be number six. And then finally, a fully qualified requester, so basically someone that qualifies to the top tier. What data should then be available to you?
And would it at least be as much as what is available and what has been available for years through public whois? And also in a situation in the past where none of the difficult questions we are looking at now have to be wrestled with, how shall we make sure that this whois data is available for the top tier? So, and I really think that we have to step back and look at these questions, because the success or even the viability of tiered access depends on the answers to these questions. And it's difficult to commit to an outcome in advance, but I definitely think we can agree on at least continuing to explore these questions, and we need to find the right answers to them. And for the moment, I really see more question marks than answers when we go straight into defining concrete models. And so we have to find a system that is feasible, financially viable, fair, and that finds this equilibrium, this right balance. So I don't know what your reaction are to these questions, but my feeling is really that we have to step back here.
Nicholas, it seems to me that Kathy's proposal, I mean, part of the advantage of starting to jump into concrete proposals is, I think, the questions that you're asking don't really get answered until you start to look at, you know, a tiered access system in the abstract could have different answers to different ones of your questions. I think Kathy's actually done a pretty good job of giving answers to your first fifth, sixth, and seventh questions, which are, you know, what are the criteria for qualification to each tier, what's displayed, to which registrants it applied, and what act, you know, what in the fully qualified mode, what access you get to. I think the second, third, and fourth questions you posed about who determines the access, the cost, and the scalability, I think sort of go to the sideline discussion that Tom and I just had, which, you know, relates to how exactly, you know, the authentication happens. And I think we've got a general principle that we've been operating under within the working group within the task force, that should probably happen at a third, not registrar by registrar, but on a third-party basis, using some sort of recognized credential, like a digital certificate or something like that. But I think that Kathy's proposal does answer a majority of your questions, other than those issues relating to who's actually performing the authentication. Would you agree with that, Kathy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so too.
So I guess, you know, Nicholas, you know, at this point, you know, we're looking for more, you know, what you think of, you know, where some of the answers are landing, as opposed to, you know, I think you've identified important issues. We're trying to start to answer some of those, and you know, Kathy's proposed one set of answers, and, you know, it would be I think most constructive to be able to see. I think on, you know, on the other side, Steve's also suggested that something like the .name model probably would be acceptable to the IPC, except for the issues related to cost and scalability. So, you know, I guess I'm asking, you know, is Kathy bridging close enough to the .name proposal to start to give some comfort to the IPC?
Well, Jordan, I would have to confess that when it comes to the .name system, I know it's a system that is that people look at positively within the IPC, but myself, I don't really know the details of this system in depth, so it's difficult for me to provide this answer right now.
It's Marilyn from the BC. Can I just say something about the? I think conceptually we had the .name approach, but in the process, and we did that several times in the previous task force and tried to keep up to date with what was going on, I'm not current with how they have implemented it, but there were, you know, I think we ought to be focusing on kind of trying to understand where this consensus around a policy examination. And so I think we might just want to identify questions that would need to be answered about the implementability and maybe, you know, mark those down and see where we can get answers to them.
I think, Marilyn, you're probably right. There's probably certain, what I would suggest probably is from a policy perspective, there's certain requirements of the policy that we'd probably like to see fulfilled prior to its implementation. And one includes, for example, you know, a relatively scalable way of doing authentication as opposed to doing it on a registrar by registrar basis.
Right. Yeah. And so if we, you know, maybe we could sort of focus on the on where we see, you know, broad consensus, where we have areas where people feel they need more answers in order to agree. I would just say, from purposes of the BC, just to re-summarize our position, we are interested in further examination and think that further examination is essential. I don't know that the task force will be able to come out with an outright, you know, endorsement of something, but we might be able to come out with a very clear, detailed list of further questions that need to be answered in order to show support for this policy direction.
Interesting. Okay. Does anyone else have comments on Kathy's proposal?
This is Maggie. I will just say that if we're going down the road of compromise, I guess most of this the ISPs could live with. The one part that we absolutely could not is the notification in Tier 2.
Right.
And there is a request for that notification to go back to the registrant. It is, you know, as Kathy said, yes, the ISPs do recognize the legitimate human rights or privacy concerns, but it is just a fact of life that there are far more nefarious actors on the web by tens of millions of fold than there are legitimate human rights concerns. So to notify them each time someone wants to know who they are and what they're up to, it is not acceptable. We just couldn't do that.
And actually, I should, I had not commented on what we could accept and couldn't accept. And from the BC perspective, that's not something that we see as viable. We also have a series of questions about how that would be done, what the timeliness of it would be, and how the, you know, so I think there's, we have a number of questions about it, but we also raise a similar concern to the one that you just raised, Maggie, about the problems that we are encountering by bad actors. And I appreciate the fact that others have concerns about other misuses of the data as well.
Thomas here. Could I get in the queue, please?
Yeah, Thomas, anyone else want to be in the queue? Okay, go ahead, Thomas.
Two comments here. First of all, GNR versus the proposal we have here, it's leaving notification aside. Both proposals are essentially manifestations of the same basic policy idea, namely requesters have to identify themselves. Where the proposals differ is scalability and ease of use, and I would actually argue that the proposal that Kathy has made could be implemented in a way which is vastly more scalable than the GNR, who is policy, and that it also could be implemented in a way that is much more comfortable than what GNR is proposing. So I think there is this proposal indeed takes care and does more than just taking care of the concerns we have heard from that point of view. It is scalable, it will be usable, it will be easy to use, and it will provide undiscriminated access from the point of view that anyone who indicate their name and their profile gets access to the data. It is not who you are, but what you disclose, and then maybe what purpose it is. If you say it's for marketing purposes, the request should probably be denied, to give just one example. The second point I would like to talk about is notification. I have to admit that I found the argument that I've heard from Maggie and Marilyn here a little bit ironic. We are hearing that it is not acceptable that malicious actors among domain name holders should get information about who is accessing their data and for what purpose. Because, well, and for that reason, no registrants should get access to that information. But what's the flip side? The flip side is that malicious actors are getting access to personal information, home addresses, telephone numbers, email addresses of registrants. We have malicious actors and we have benevolent actors on both sides. And I do not believe that it is a viable assumption for policy-making purposes to say that only data, that those data users are by default the good guys and data subjects are by default the bad guys. We have to live with the reality that we have bad guys and good guys on both sides, and we have to, somehow we have to balance. Cassie's proposal goes a very long way towards creating precisely this kind of balance.
Yeah, and Thomas, I don't disagree with that. I think you're right that there are good and bad actors on both sides, but this is what the tiered access system is supposed to address, the bad actors on the requesting side. So that's really the problem that we're trying to solve, but if we solve it too far to one side, then your balance is thrown out of whack.
Well, the problem you are trying to solve in the first place is getting access to the personal identifiable information of the bad actors on the data user side. That's the first point. That information is available right now along with all the information that has to be protected. That's the problem we are dealing with. It's not the problem we are dealing with is not just getting rid of bad actors here.
Can I get in line, please, Jordan? Hello?
Oh, hi, sorry. Yeah, so Tom, and then anyone else want to be in the queue?
I just want to say this is Steve Metallic joining the call.
Oh, hi, Steve. Glad you could make it.
And I'd like to be back in the queue.
Okay, so Tom, and then Marilyn.
And Maggie.
And then Maggie.
Oh, throw me in at the end.
And then Kathy. Okay, go ahead, Tom.
Okay, correct. First of all, I just want to say that the registrars really support this proposal because we think it achieves the balance, which we never had before, and it's just fair for the data subject to be notified if someone is requesting the data. So it's just a matter of fairness and balance, and I don't really understand the concerns that were raised right now, because most of the time what will happen if someone finds out that someone is inquiring about the person who is kind of making something he shouldn't do, and he's causing some kind of problems to a legitimate party, and he finds out about who it is, that someone is looking after him and who that person is, and it might even be the person who he's causing harm to right now, he would probably be warned, and he will be quit doing the fraud he's trying to do. So I think it's even useful. You know, you don't even have to contact that person, give him a warning right away that you're watching him and that he would get in trouble. I mean, it might be possible that a person is moving to some other place or whatever, trying to alter data and so on. But I think in general, we are not talking about bad actors, but in general, we are talking about people trying to figure out information of with a good reason about a person who's not doing anything. For example, for looking up who he could contact to buy the domain name, for example. And it's just a good balance that both people know who they are and what they want from each other.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Marilyn and Maggie, could I actually just ask while you give your comments, could you speak to the issue of what is the concern with the notification? What's the bad outcome that could happen if a bad actor is notified of an inquiry into their contact information. And Marilyn, I'll turn it over to you to make whatever other comments you want to as well.
I wasn't, I was going to actually propose a way to possibly move past this, Jordan. I think this falls in the category of areas where we may have differences, but we may move to finding ways to resolve those differences. I would think from the BC perspective, for instance, we are concerned about the timeliness of access. So, you know, but I'll give an example of an area where I think we need to talk more about this. Law enforcement is not, when they are doing an investigation of a crime or child molestation or some other issue like that, they're not going to be comfortable with being involved in a notification queue, however that's operated. So my suggestion would be we try to identify those areas where we aren't in agreement and focus on the areas where we're close to agreement and then come back and work on where we can find solutions to the areas we're not in agreement, if that makes any sense.
And yeah, no, I agree. That's a very helpful proposal. Okay, is that all you have, Marilyn?
Yeah.
Okay, Maggie?
Yeah, and to address your question, Jordan, it's for the very purpose that Marilyn just stated. When you have law enforcement requests, oftentimes when we find things on our network that may be illegal or infringing, the law enforcement authority or the civil authority in some instances does not want to notify the offending party until they are complete with their investigation. That is the only way that you can actually catch people. That is the only way that you can actually try to prosecute people, because some investigation, as I think is just common sense, cannot always be done out in the public. It needs to be done privately, and for that reason, I don't think it's a viable or practical approach to send a notification each time.
Okay, thanks. Do you have other comments you wanted to make as well?
Now, I think that was the general question, was what is my problem, or why? What is the ISB's problem with this notification? And it's just simply not practical, and it's not a viable approach. It doesn't get to the heart of the problem as to why someone will want to launch an investigation or who is request in the first place.
Right, thanks. Okay, Kathy.
Going back, first addressing Marilyn's issue of the timeliness of the access, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, in the compromise proposal, Marilyn, I think it's instantaneous. Because this is going to be an automated system, as I understand it, from the registrar's perspective. So once that certification goes through, once it's approved, you know, once the authentication goes through, which is automatic through the certificates, the Tier 2 data goes out immediately, as does the notification to the domain name registrant. So this is all real time. So to answer that question, the timeliness is immediate. The balance issue. Again, I just want to put on the other side of the scale, you know, identity theft, stalking, profiling, that CD that Network Solutions was waving around in Rome with the tens of thousands of entries with personal data from the WHOIS, then cross-referenced with other data. I think the CD came out of Canada and it was for sale. So identity theft, stalking, profiling, there are real dangers to this data. We've heard about them from the EU. My guess is the vast majority of the access for Tier 2 will not be law enforcement, will be, you know, people kind of wanting to check their marks, check other people's marks, you know, will not be law enforcement. So if we can talk about that situation, I'd really like it and see if that works for a non-law, you know, for the vast majority of access. And then law enforcement may be a special exception for special language, but to me, this proposal provides a balance. If we've got private data requesters, private domain name holders, this seems to balance both sides pretty well.
Thomas here. Could I get into the queue, please?
Thomas, why don't, whatever comments you have, and I'd like to move the conversations. It's something that Marilyn suggested in the moment, which is, you know, see if there are some common areas where we might have enough agreement that we can outline some principles, at least, in the initial report, and maybe use that as a basis to build on between now and the final report. So go ahead, Thomas.
Well, I'm mainly going to support and stress some points that Cassie just made. First of all, instantaneous access. Certification will take some time, but this does not have to happen at the point of time of a request. You go to some certification authority, obtain your certificate. You do it in advance if you know you're going to have a need for the detailed information. Once that is through, you have instantaneous access. It is like entering a passphrase on your local computer. Your local computer will unlock the certificate, will use it to sign the request and transmit your certified identity to the registrar, and will then return the information. It won't feel much different from the system that's there now, except that I would hope the software works better. That's one point. The other important point is what we should have in mind with respect to tier 2 is general access. It is the normal case, it's the average case. Access that happens specifically to deal with contractual obligations has a different tier. Likewise, I would argue that access that happens based on legal rights that law enforcement has should not be dealt with on tier 2. It's a different concept. It's exercise of legal powers. That's not what we are dealing here with. What we are dealing with on this task force, it is a separate case. It can be dealt with by the registrars directly. It may even be possible to implement some kind of special automated trace access for law enforcement using the framework that is being suggested. I think there's quite a bit of room for implementation of reasonable approaches, but ultimately these approaches will have to depend on what kind of powers law enforcement gets from applicable law. We should not forget that. So I would say measure by which we should look at the balance here is a balance between data users that are exercising legitimate interests, but that are not exercising legal rights or duties. That's a difference.
Thanks, Thomas. Okay, I do want to see if we can drive our conversation to a place that Marilyn suggested, which is, we have a very limited amount of time, not just on this call, but in absolute terms, before we're expected to deliver an initial report, and maybe it makes sense to essentially say, we think tiered access is interesting and something that ought to be pursued, and here are some principles that at the task force that we've agreed upon, and list those principles. And then say, and there's still these remaining few issues that, you know, we have questions about and we're still trying to resolve. And maybe use the public comment period to get some more information that would help us resolve those and start to, and use the time between now and the final report in order to maybe nail down some more specifics. And some of the specifics, I suspect, are going to have to be deferred to an implementation phase in any case. But that may be an approach that allows us to make a generalized recommendation without necessarily having to resolve all of the more complicated nuances at this point, and understanding that the recommendation going forward is predicated on resolving those remaining issues. So, to that end, what I'm hearing, I think, generally speaking, is that in principle, tiered access seems to have fairly wide support as a mechanism of balancing you know, privacy and contactability issues. The sort of sub-principles I'm hearing under that are that there ought to be technical contact data, or technical-related data still available to all, that contactability for the registrant might be more limited in another tier, that there ought to be timely response for requesters, and that there ought to be some mechanism to centralize the authentication or certification of requesters so that that process doesn't have to be done on a one-off basis, registrar by registrar, and the information can be delivered in a timely manner.
Jordan, can I offer one more point?
Sure.
I assume there would be consensus on. We put this in our statement, but we feel very strongly that it has to be done in a manner that is affordable broadly by all the registrars and not give a market advantage to registrars based on size or you know, market dominance. So there has to be an issue, I think, of affordability for the registrars and also affordability for the users as well. A $40 certificate will be a barrier for individuals. So, you know, I think I would assume we would all be concerned that whatever the process is, that affordability is not about for the users as well as for the registrars.
Yeah, I mean, we've discussed that more in the context of the scalability issue.
Right.
So I don't know. I haven't heard specific objections to the idea of affordability. It would seem strange that there would be, but it's not something that we've really had discussion on in the past. But certainly that seems reasonable. You know, I'd certainly invite other people to, you know, comment on that list of principles and or you know, add things that they think might be appropriate to add that we think there's consensus on.
This is Kathy. Affordability, I'd have to think about and kind of understand better what that means, but I think timeliness, scalability, all of that goes into the consensus point. And I think you've definitely got a majority in favor of, you know, balance and protection from the abuses of both sides, of both the data user and the data recipient.
Yeah, I think as a principle, we've got more than the majority. I think when it comes down to how we achieve that balance, we run into more of an issue. So, any other comments on those principles?
I had one other question. You
sure.
Talked about technical contact data, and then you talked about contactability data for the registrant, but we didn't talk about There are three categories of data that are gathered now, three different groups of entities.
Right, you mean you're talking about the admin contact, I suppose.
Yeah,
I sort of have lumped the admin, most of the proposals I've seen have lumped the admin contact together with the registrant. So essentially the first tier would only contain technical data, whether that be technical contact data or name servers or you know, registrar information, et cetera.
And then I take it that we, because, you know, I think there may be some variances on what my constituency would think needs to go into the technical contact, but I wanted to ask, besides just stating that, I wanted to ask another related question. Are we assuming in this that if a entity has chosen to use a third party, such as their ISP contact, such as their ISP or a different third-party service, that contact data would be what is in the technical contact data?
Right. Whoever is responsible for the technical administration of the domain, and whether that be an ISP or...
Sorry, my question wasn't clear. Let's say that a registrant has chosen to use an anonymous registry service.
So you mean like a proxy server service?
I understand that's what perhaps this group is calling it, okay. So like a proxy service. The technical contact data may be the ISP, but in that case, so the proxy contact data would be what is involved, what is provided then in the contact in the registrant field.
We have last week while you weren't here, we actually I think made a general decision to that on the we wanted to get more information generally about how proxy services work.
Sure, right.
Because we don't necessarily have a great understanding of the different nuances, so that's a little bit difficult to answer. But I think if we look at either the .name proposal or the registrar proposal or what Kathy's proposed, under no circumstances I don't think is the registrant name disclosed in the first tier. Maybe the name is, actually. Let me take a look.
It's a name and it's a country. Well, it's
yeah, but you're right. So you're right. So the name, yeah. So the name would be whoever the registrant is. So if the registration is performed through a proxy, Maryland, I guess the name of the registrant would show up as being whoever that proxy is, because in reality, the way those services generally work is they actually become the de facto registrant.
All right. And I know I wasn't here last week, but so, and the group is thinking that this would be a uniform implementation regardless of the type of registrant, whether it's a government agency, a business, or an individual, right?
Yeah, that's correct. We had a discussion about whether we thought it was useful to distinguish between types of registrants, and the consensus was no. Do we have any other thoughts, comments, questions about these sort of general principles? Do we feel like we're safe saying, this is what we're thinking about, this tiered access business? And then I'd like to also highlight a list of things where, we do have additional questions, because the public comment period may be a useful forum for us to get some additional information to help us resolve some of those.
Jordan, this is Steve Metalis. I'm sorry if I missed this, but could you repeat the list of principles that you're talking about here?
Yeah, sure.
About only technical data, but apparently that's not the case.
Yeah. Okay. So sorry. Let me run through them again. The principles are that the task force generally supports, in principle, supports tiered access as a mechanism of balancing privacy concerns and contactability, and the sub principles are that. There should be that the public who is will only include technical information, including technical contact information. That the sort of restricted tier, of which there may be one or more, will include contactability information for the registrant and admin for non-technical entities associated with the domain. There should be timely response to requests to gain access to the protected tier, that there ought to be a centralized sort of authorization mechanism in order to gain access to the protected tier, so that requesters don't need to go and do one-off requests to individual registrars. And Maryland's also suggested the idea that it ought to be affordable for registrars and for requesters.
And that there should be some balance on both sides?
Yeah, so I was trying to articulate that at the high level. That's what the point of the tiered access is. I mean, we can work on language up there to get it.
But on the first point, didn't we just have a discussion that neither of the proposals that are put on the table, none of them actually meet that first criterion?
Which, the timely response criteria?
No, the public who has only includes technical information.
What do you mean by that, Steve?
Well, when I look at Kathy's proposal, the anonymous user, which is what I think you're talking about, would get the name of the registrant, the country of the registrant, name of the administrative contact, name of the technical contact.
so you're saying
there is some of this information. This is not, when you say technical information, what do you mean?
Yeah, so I guess you're saying that it's not purely tech. There's some vague information about the registrant and admin contact. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I'm suggesting it doesn't. None of the proposals that have been put forward meet that first criteria.
Yeah, that's true. So we could maybe refine that language. But the idea is that the contact information for non-technical entities associated with the domain is only provided in a protected tier. Would that be a better way to articulate that?
Yeah.
Well, for that only limited data is provided in public tier.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to necessarily, you know, craft specific language on the fly as much as sort of convey ideas at this point.
Identification of the data requester, reason by the data requester, all of that.
Oh, okay. No, those are good. I think let me pose that question, but I think we've had pretty good consensus around that, which is that the for access to the protected tier, that any requester in that tier needs to be identified in advance of being provided that data.
Let me question whether we have consensus. We may.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm trying to ask. Yeah,
I'm not there yet, and consensus is defined in the ICANN bylaws. I think, you know, you may have broad agreement, which may have, you know what I mean, Jordan. I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just saying I think we have to be careful about saying we have consensus on that particular point right now, because I think there has to be more exploration of it for me to say where the BC will be.
So you're saying that the BC might want people, unknown entities, to get access to the protected tier?
I think we have to understand what the process is of certification. And, you know, let me just give you an example. Within my company alone, I have over 500 legal agents who pay attention to policing our mark. So, you know, we're going to have, and I have paralegals inside the company, I have sysadmins, so we're going to have to pay attention to, I don't know that unknown is the phrase here, but we're going to have to pay attention to what the certification process is to be sure that we are able to identify the entities who would need to get access.
Right, so you're suggesting, I think, more that the identification may not necessarily relate to a specific individual so much as an entity, it sounds like.
I'm asking that question. I think that in the implementation, any companies like mine will have to think about this, and we're going to have to think about it if we expect to get broad support for it.
Jordan, could I follow up on that?
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
I think that this kind of highlights one of the issues that we may refer to as an implementation issue, but it could be a determinative issue, which is, you know, for example, in Kathy's proposal, it says that the requester in Tier 2 would have to provide the name, address, email, and phone number data in a manner which can be reliably and automatically verified and authenticated. And I guess, you know, I'd ask Tom whether that, because I think this is originally from his draft, how does that correspond with the manner in which registrars now obtain this data? Or is there such a format?
Yes, yeah, so Stephen, in the interest of moving the dialogue along, I think, you know, what I've been pushing for here is not necessarily to say, okay, let's adopt, you know, Kathy's compromise proposal or even necessarily a variation thereof, but let's say, you know, the task force has agreed, or, you know, we can put it to a vote if we have to, but as, you know, either the task force or these task force representatives have agreed that, you know, in principle, we think that a tiered access system would work, and here are the principles that we think it ought to adhere to, and here's some additional issues that we want to see resolved before before we actually, you know, we actually take that to the implementation phase, and use the time between now and the final report in order to start addressing some of those issues as well as the public comment period. So I think you're right that, you know, there may be the mechanism by which the identification happens and, you know, who exactly is being identified may be something that you know, still needs refinement. You know, but I guess I'm asking, you know, are the IPC or maybe the BC in this case uncomfortable with the idea of suggesting that prior to getting access to the protected tier that some identification should occur of the requester?
But again, Jordan, it's going to come down to how it gets done. We might find that the BC could support it because it's understandable and implementable, or I may find that they can't support it because it's so convoluted that they feel it's not implementable. If you're asking, that's why we said in our statement, we are conceptually in agreement with exploring this and trying to take it to the next step.
Sure. So I guess, Marilyn, how do you view trying to take it to the next step?
I think we need to identify the questions that need to be answered and keep doing, you know,
Right. Okay. So let me point then to, why don't we step over for a moment then to the issue of, you know, what are the questions that we do want to see addressed prior to implementation? It sounds like the means of identification and authorization of the requester is an issue that we want to see addressed prior to actually proceeding with this.
The means and right and but the cost, you know, ensuring that there's a cost assessment of what it's going to cost to be a certified requester, and that there, you know, I don't think we need to resolve those, but I think we need to just walk through what we think the questions are that would need to be addressed in order to say this is a feasible proposal that we could put policy endorsement behind.
Yeah, agreed. So I guess I'm trolling right now for those questions so we can, you know, it seems like that's if one side of the equation is that we want to say, so here, you know, here in principle, we'd like, you know, here are some principles that we agree with and here are some outstanding questions that we have that we need to resolve prior to being able to proceed with it.
Okay, so Kathy, so the principle is that, or the question is, can a method of identification be found for the data user that's cheap, easy, streamlined, online, and able to be authenticated online? Is this doable? Quickly, easily, cheaply.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good question.
That's a good question, and I think it would also be applicable to registration.
We may find that the work of Task Force 3 helps us out with the answer to that question.
Or vice versa.
Indeed.
That's a good reference point right there.
Yep. So are there other questions like that people like to propose that we might want to include in our initial report? So that we might, this way we can leverage the public comment period in order to perhaps get some input and some insight into these questions.
I guess the same question with all the word online included. It's important that we distinguish between two kinds of efforts that will be involved. One set of effort is the effort for an individual query, which should be online, streamlined, quick, etc. The other question is the effort for, say, getting certified initially, and it's not at all clear that this can happen online entirely. It's scales different. The two efforts scale differently, and I would guess that for the upfront effort, this may involve an offline process like exchanging a letter, exchanging a telefax, stuff like that. I would not exclude that kind of process in the question already.
Right, yeah, no, that's a fair point, and that's exactly what .NEME has proposed for their highest tier, is an offline process.
Yep.
And let me just throw out one that we've been discussing throughout, which is what contact data should be shown in the protected tier. And another question we discussed today is it reasonable to notify registrants when their protected data is accessed?
By a private party.
Ooh, she's putting a limit on it now. By a private party.
Could we change that to a party that is not legally, has no specific legal authorization to access the data? I think that's the question we are really asking. We're not asking who someone is, but if he has a specific right to access data. A panelist in the UDRP panel could have a specific right to access data about domain names held by the parties to the proceeding, but the same panelist certainly would not have authority to look at other data. So we should be careful here. Same applies, of course, for police officers.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable modification.
Legal or contractual authorization. Contractual authorization, for instance, in the transfer setting.
You already get Tier 3 access there.
I'm sorry?
You get Tier 3 access on the contractual.
Right, but that's what he's saying, is that you shouldn't. The registrant shouldn't get notified every time that happens.
Absolutely.
So anyone else with these types of questions they'd like to see raised in the interim report? Okay. 5 minutes over our original schedule. I know that some people have indicated they do have a 12 o'clock stop. So let me suggest this. I will attempt to draft up a bit of language here with regards to sort of summarize. I've been taking notes, and I'll try to write it. My guess is that redrafting will be required that we can hopefully work on the list. I'm skeptical that it's going to happen between now and midnight tomorrow, but we'll see what we can do. Let me just briefly ask, sort of changing gears here, if people have had an opportunity. Steve has very graciously, I think, drafted 3 sets of specific recommendations that essentially there's been, you know, we've discussed and agreed to the idea behind them on the calls, all 3, and I think he's drafted language that there's been no response to on the list.
Wait, we're talking about the proxy stuff?
The proxy stuff, the national law stuff, and the obtaining consent stuff.
I do have some comments. They were just other things, but not, I mean, yeah, of course, but we were working on different things. So if
I know,
you want to put that out for comments, then...
Okay, let me suggest...
Nothing more, adding more of the questions, just as we've done today. No one commented on the compromise proposal online, but there are questions that need to be added, as with, you know, same with the proxies especially. Additional questions non-commercial would have.
Right, so I guess, you know, I'd like to... Those are places where it seems like we're pretty close to actually being able to have more concrete recommendations that we could include in the report. And so we could either have a What I'd like to do, actually, if possible, for people that can remain on the call, is maybe segue to, you know, any questions you may have on those, Kathy.
I'm one of the people that has to go.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Okay. Well, so I think it is fairly urgent that we address those on the list, because otherwise they're going to make their way into the report as
okay.
is.
I will do that by this evening.
Okay.
And I do have to go, Jordan, but do we have some sense of, because tomorrow when you report to council, we need to give some sort of sense of the time extension?
Yeah. Let me see whether or not people agree with this, but I think we, assuming that we actually get all the piece parts of the interim report that people have volunteered to produce tomorrow, I think we've got some more dialogue that's going to happen with regards to specific proposals that we can hopefully predominantly work on list. My hope would be that on next Monday's call, we could have that all sort of pieced together by that point. I've been trying to hunt down Barbara to see whether or not she can at least condense all of the various pieces into a unified report. And, you know, assuming that's the case, to have something on Monday that we can actually take a vote on as a task force. So we'll be a few days late, but not terribly so. That sounds reasonable to everyone.
So when would this be circulated? I'm sorry, we would vote on Monday, or we would circulate on Monday, or...
Ideally speaking, we would vote on Monday, which means I think no later. Ideally speaking, everyone will get their contributions in tomorrow, and we'll have worked through we'll work through redrafting on the list, you know, prior to Monday, and then on Monday we'll have a finished document. I don't know whether, I mean, it depends on the scope of changes people are going to want to make to the various contributions, whether or not that's feasible.
George.
Yep.
George. My advice would be you need a fallback date, because Monday, I think, will identify things still that people have, and if groups are going to submit minority reports, I think you probably need another date beyond Monday to deal with that.
I think Monday is obviously the best case scenario, I think, so I don't disagree with you. Do you have any thoughts, Marilyn, as to what you would view as a reasonable fallback date?
Can I ask what the other chairs have proposed? I kind of lost track of that, but I thought they were proposing a specific time extension.
I have not seen any proposal from the other chairs. Glenn, do you know anything about that? Are you still on the line?
They haven't made any specific proposal. I know Jeff is just asking for more time.
Well, it seems to me... that we do need to remember that what we put forward, council has to digest and be able to respond to. So if it's going to take two more weeks for all of us to get it done, you know, have a preliminary vote on Monday, identify any issues that we think could be worked on, identify whether there have to be minority reports drafted, do a proof and edit and make sure everybody gets a chance to read through it one final time. I think we're talking well into next week to allow that, and many people are traveling, but we ought to try to have uniform suggestion from all three of the chairs, I think.
Yeah, I'll try to follow up with Jeff and Brian today, so it sounds like you're suggesting, Marilyn, I think not unreasonably so, that the earliest would be about the 17th of May, which is the following week, not next week, but the following one. And maybe, depending on how convoluted things get, maybe even a little bit beyond that. But that gives us at least all of next week to deal with responses and editing and so on. So that's probably what I would suggest at the meeting. But I'll follow up with Jeff and Brian and see where their heads are. They may want even more time than that, which I'll be glad to go along with. Okay. Well, it sounds like we have lost a bunch of people, and so I'm going to wrap this up, I will, you know, like I said, it is very important that everyone that has agreed to contribute something to the interim initial report do so tomorrow, so we can start to get it packed up and have something for us to discuss on Monday. So please endeavor to do that, and we will meet at our regular time on Monday after getting some feedback from the council tomorrow. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Jordan.
Bye.
Thanks, Jordan. Bye.